This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
So I read in USA Today that the majority of people stop GLP-1 weight loss injection shots in a year. Now, what's concerning is if you get off GLP-1s, there's a real chance you can gain all the weight back. The solution? Almacid, a natural superfood protein shake. University studies show it optimizes your metabolism so you can lose weight easily, and Almacid has been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Use Almacid with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at almacid.com. That's almased.com.
Tommy's out today. I'm in. Glad to be with you for the next 4 hours here on WWL. Hey, I love Family Feud, no matter who's hosting. One person texts us. Another person says, the floor on Fox is pretty interesting. Yeah, I asked, with the 10,000th episode of The Price is Right airing today, what is your favorite game show, hearing from some people that it is The Price is Right? We'll keep that thread going throughout the morning here on WWL. But right now we want to turn our attention to the federal government, to the Trump administration, and to the big cuts that we keep hearing that have already come and more are on the way to the federal government. To help us understand what's going on and why, we got political scientist at the university, at Indiana University, Aaron Dusso, to join us. Morning, Professor.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Glad you could be here. Cabinet meeting, but a non-cabinet member was there and talking about everybody better find ways to do some big old cutting in the federal government. What's on the horizon for the Trump administration in terms of cutting the federal government?
I mean, the cuts, one of the big things that's happening right now with the Trump administration is his ability to get a budget resolution through Congress so that Congress can enact not only cuts to the budget, but also raise money, particularly for ICE and the Border Patrol, which right now is in, you know, needs a, you know, $100 to $150 billion in order to be able to continue its operations. So right now they need money as much as they need cuts.
So is that what this really comes down to? Is Elon Musk telling the department heads and the cabinet members and the public through his appearances with his bedazzled chainsaw that all of this money is going to be saved by the federal government so that they can deport illegal immigrants?
Well, I mean, the money that the DOGE department is saying that it's cutting are really situations where the president is using an empowerment ability to take money that was allocated by Congress to these various departments and committees to conduct some type of you know, it might be the USAID in order to, you know, engage in some type of programs in Africa to help sick children. It's what it's doing is just saying you're not going to spend that money anymore, and so we're going to hold it. The money's still there; it's just being held. So the cuts don't really come until Congress does it, and that's why Congress becomes a key player in this.
Yeah, a lot of people have wondered, where is the legislative branch of government in all of this? And that's an interesting perspective that you shed some light on, the fact that this money being saved is not available for the Trump administration to spend because Congress earmarked it for these programs. But if the federal government doesn't spend it, if the White House stops that spending, it'll sit in those accounts and turn into a surplus, and then Congress can decide what to do with it.
Right. I mean, this is the way it has historically acted. Obviously, the Trump administration has shown its willingness to think creatively, I would say, about how things are going to work. And one, you know, action they theoretically could take is to try and actually start moving money around that hasn't been earmarked specifically by Congress. Now, again, that wouldn't be that would be a new activity for a president to do. And it's not clear exactly how Congress would react or even the courts would react. So we might enter that kind of world soon if Congress can't pass money, particularly for Border Patrol and ICE and mass deportations.
$150 billion, was that the number you said that the administration wants to do these mass deportations and to track down all these illegal immigrant criminals in the country?
I've seen different numbers. Somewhere between $100 and $150 billion is what they're asking for right now, and that's to be included in this next budget.
We're seeing activity already, and we're hearing anecdotally that illegal border crossings are down. We have seen some plane loads of illegal immigrants who the administration says had committed other criminal acts while in the United States have been tracked down and deported. But you expect that activity to pick up and dramatically?
I would assume, again, it all depends on money. Obviously, you have to be able to pay these agents and ICE agents that are going to go around to do this in the flights that are going to fly to whichever country they're going to go to or Guantanamo. So all that costs money, particularly setting up detention centers within the United States, again, money. And so that money needs to be found somewhere. And if Congress doesn't allocate it, perhaps the next step for the administration would be to try and move it from some other department that supposedly they have closed.
We're talking to Associate Professor of Political Science at Indiana University, Indianapolis, Aaron Dusso. When we come back, I want to ask him, is what we're seeing out of the White House now what Trump supporters voted him into office to do? I did hear a lot of folks before the election saying we need to stop spending money overseas, helping rebuilding other countries we've destroyed or helping other nations that have nothing to do with the United States and use that money to help people here at home. Is that what we're seeing? Is it reaction to that sentiment? Why is the Trump administration working so hard and so publicly to cut so much money from the federal budget? Is this what his voters wanted? We'll ask Professor Dusso that after we check on WWL traffic. Elon Musk is taking a very public, central role in the Trump White House. Is this what voters wanted when they overwhelmingly elected Donald Trump to return to Washington? Aaron Dusso, an associate professor of political science at Indiana University, Indianapolis, is our guest. Professor, are we seeing out of the Trump administration what the MAGA Republicans wanted?
I mean, I think it depends on the terminology we use. If we use kind of that generic, you know, cuts to spending, then yes, absolutely. I think that a vast majority of Trump voters were looking for cuts to the federal government spending, no question. The difference is, though, that's a generic term with no specifics. And so once you actually get in office, you have to cut very specific programs. And that's where the you know, mud hits the fan here. And that is the problem that I think the Trump administration is running into right now, when we have to actually have to cut Medicaid, we have to actually cut Medicare, we actually have to cut Social Security. That's when people have particular problems.
Do you envision big cuts coming to those marquee programs that have for so many generations been political no man's land? You just don't cut those programs. Do you think that we will see the Trump White House actually have substantial reductions in Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security?
I think that based on the budget resolution that was just passed by the House yesterday, I think there's going to have to be some type of cuts to Medicaid, if not Medicare, in that process. Now, reconciliation process can't include cuts to Social Security, so that's off the table right there. But certainly, in order to overcome the $4.5 trillion in tax cuts that they're proposing, they're going to have significant major spending cuts, and that's going to come from mandatory spending for things like Medicare.
We're hearing anecdotally already about federal employees who have been impacted by this first round of cuts. We know another and probably much larger second round of cuts.
Marketers, are you ready to make an impact with audio advertising? People are hungry for authentic connections in a world buzzing all around us. How do you cut through the noise and truly reach your audience? Visit stateofaudio.com to see Odyssey's State of Audio, the Trends Report. Uncover the secrets to high-impact creative. Learn how AI is revolutionizing the industry. And get ahead of the curve on measurement and audience trends. Don't just stay in the game. Win it. Visit stateofaudio.com and download your free copy.
Musk is on the way as Elon Musk continues to lead this Doge process. Is there the potential, as we see now, some Trump supporters being impacted by this who maybe didn't realize that they would lose their jobs or their programs that they like, that we do see some Republicans maybe not all in step with the Trump administration throughout Congress and in the Senate?
Well, I think it's not a very real likelihood that you're going to have certain Republicans that are seeing such complaints from their districts and their states that they're going to say, okay, we can't continue to do this. And I think the most likely place we're going to see that change is going to be happening with the very budget process that's going to be happening over the next year in Congress, where in the fall, they're going to have to make final decisions on these cuts. And I think in the fall, we're going to have a lot different political environment than we have right now. As the Trump administration's approval rate has continued to dip, it's likely they'll be underwater by the fall. And at that point, the Trump administration loses a lot of its leverage.
You're already seeing that trend? I mean, is the honeymoon already over? Are we already seeing the approval numbers that rocketed Donald Trump back to the White House start to level off?
Oh, yeah. Now, yeah, we're already seeing it. So it peaked at just about under 50%. And at this point, you know, he was about 8 to 9 points above water when it comes to approval rating. At this point, he's dropped down to about a 48% approval rating with only about, you know, his disapproval going significantly up, where he's only about 1% above water. And so it's likely within the next month or a few weeks, even, he'll probably dip below, be underwater when it comes to approval rating. And that didn't happen to the Biden administration until the end of August of his first year. So this is happening much quicker than it did under Biden.
Why do you think that is? Why are we so quickly seeing that overwhelming support that put him into the White House starting to drop?
Well, I mean, obviously, it's the press coverage of what the Elon Musk and his Doge department are doing. It's not being seen as positive, particularly with all the stories of people, you know, thousands of people being thrown out of work. That just rarely plays well, even among people who voted for him to make cuts to the federal government.
Donald Trump, this is the end of the line for him. He can't run again. There's no other political office for him to seek after this. Does he care?
Well, that's one of the things about a lame duck. Seemingly, you don't have to care, although there is ways that the president maybe could find his way back in office in 4 years.
How do you mean?
Well, I mean, one option would be he runs as vice president and has his son run as president. And then the son, once he is elected, he resigns from office and then he becomes president again.
Would that be constitutional?
As far as the Constitution, that seemingly would be, yeah.
All right, Professor Dusso, what an interesting way to leave the discussion. Thanks for joining us here on WWL. Have a great day. It's news time. Coming up after the news, we'll be talking about what happens if the Pope dies. 6:45 on your Wednesday morning, February the 26th, 2025, the last Wednesday of the month. It's going to be March before you know it, but we've got a little bit of parading, partying, and celebrating to do before then, as Fat Tuesday is coming up just 6 days away. I'm Dave Cohen, in for Tommy Tucker. The Pope has been hospitalized in critical condition. We're hearing various reports about how well or not well he's been doing, but it had us wondering, since it's been a while since we've had a new Pope, how the process will work when it is time to find the next pope. So we asked Joelle Rollo Costner to join us, a professor of medieval history at the University of Rhode Island and specialist of the late medieval papacy in the Avignon in Rome. Good morning. How are you, Professor?
Good morning. And how are you?
I'm doing well. We're in the midst and throes of Mardi Gras here, and we've got parades every day and every night until Fat Tuesday. So.
Yeah, I'm French, so I know everything about Mardi Gras.
Well, come on down. There's still a few rooms available here or there if you need some place to stay.
That'll work.
The Pope has been hospitalized, and it has people wondering about the process now.
Sure.
When was the last time we had a new Pope? How long have we had this Pope?
I think that he was elected in 2013. So what? It's like 12 years. What's interesting, there is a tradition, a very old tradition, which states that very few popes have lasted over what is called St. Peter's years, which means over 25 years. And I think the one of the most recent would have been John Paul II. But also, I was listening to Italian news before I talked to you guys. And so he had a couple of, I think, like three CT scans of his lungs. So he's pretty stable. I mean, he's not out of the woods. And I don't know if you saw any pictures, but he was quite swollen. So he may not be gone yet. I think he's a fighter. But it's kind of, we will see. But in any case, he has been ruling. He has been Pope for something like 12 years.
All right. Yeah.
So last one, 2013.
And of course, it would be, since popes tend to be older men,
yep.
It would be very unusual to see a pope last for 25 years like Pope John Paul
yes.
II did.
Yes, and actually I have a funny example. So the Avignon Papacy is when the popes were resided in France throughout the 14th century. And there is one pope elected called John the 22nd, and he's elected in 1316, if I remember.
yeah, you remember it well, 1316.
Yeah, well, I mean, if I don't, it's my specialty. He's elected because he's like in his 70s. So everybody, you know, the College of Cardinals think, well, you know, he's old, he's not going to last a long time. And the irony is that he lived up to his 90s. I mean, in the 14th century, that's, you know, not very common. And not only did he live in his 90s, but he's one of the biggest reforming popes that we have in the Middle Ages, because he really created a solid administration. He centralized taxation and everything. So sometimes old men can accomplish amazing things.
And Francis has been widely regarded as a popular pope, but he has not yes. done anything overwhelmingly significant when it comes to changing church policies or reform, has he?
So it's interesting because there is a tendency to treat Francis as a very modern, very progressive. You know, the church is a little bit like politics in any countries or in any democracies, where you have a progressive side and you have a traditionalist side. And Francis has always been considered on the progressive side. I mean, he did things like which caused him lots of issues with the traditionalist side, is that he proposed a blessing for same-sex people. He proposed a blessing for like divorcees, and then there was some recanting, saying, "Well, you know, a blessing is not a benediction." So I think that he has tried. He has been one of the first one, if not the first pope, to address climate change. He has a papal letter saying that we need to take care not only of our spirits, but we also need to take care of our planet. So, I mean, he has tried to live with his time, but I think he's also realizing, you know, you have to do politics when you are at the Vatican also. And I think that he realized that there is somewhat of a large group, very traditional, who does not want to see this. So, listen, I am not inside the Vatican because I am a woman, so I would never be allowed to be inside.
Well,
you know,
never say never, but currently not allowed.
Well, I never say never, but for the past, 2,000 years, it has not happened, so...
I'm going to pause you right there because we got to get to a little traffic update and take a break. And then when we come back, we'll continue this conversation should we expect out of the next pope. If this pope has been progressive, even though he has not done anything permanently to change church policy, there have been some controversial moves by this pope. Will the next pope continue that direction, or do we expect a return to somebody more conservative? And how does the process work? We'll review that after this on WWL. Good morning, Dave Cohen in for Tommy Tucker. We're talking about the Pope. Pope Francis, 88 years old, has been the Pope for a dozen years and has been in the hospital now for 12 days, battling chronic lung disease and bronchitis. But he was sitting up today receiving therapy, and his prognosis remains, at least for now, pretty positive that he is making progress. A CT scan of his lungs has showed that he is not at this point suffering from something that, well, will kill him immediately. Nonetheless, we're talking about what happens when it is time to select the next pope. Joel Rollo Koster is our guest, professor of medieval history at the University of Rhode Island. You were talking about how this has been a pretty progressive pope in Francis. Do you think that when the cardinals select his replacement, they will want someone who is as or more progressive? Or, as we've seen in political circles historically, after a progressive individual, often we see a return to someone more conservative?
So I had that conversation with a journalist, and I said, you know what, I think it's going to follow what's going on in elections all over the world. Basically, if you look at the College of Cardinals, so we have something like 250 cardinals. I don't have the exact numbers, but it's around that. Of the 250 cardinals, somewhat, you have you are not allowed to participate in the vote if you are over 80 years old. So that gives us down to something like 130 cardinals. And if you look at the composition of that voting college, you realize that the majority would go towards a traditionalist. So that would be a group of cardinals which does not really like the way Francis has been going, which would like to go back to things like, you know, the mass in Latin, or, you know, stop blessing several groups of people. But what is interesting is that Pope Francis has anticipated what could happen. And what he has been doing is that what I would call stacking the college, meaning that he has nominated in consistories something like 60% of the College of Cardinals has been named by Francis. So I'm assuming the strategy here is to think that, after all, Francis nominated me, so I'm going to vote like his policies. On the other hand, once Francis is gone, you can also assume that people will vote whatever they want without, you know, thinking, oh, I owe Francis a vote, which would be a progressive vote.
Thank you, Professor. We're running out of time. We appreciate it. When he does die, the Cardinals will convene and we'll see what happens then. Arthur Hardy joins us after the news.